Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hospice News Elevate podcast. I'm Holly Vossel, senior reporter for Hospice News and Palliative Care News. In today's episode, we're addressing some of the largest unmet needs among pediatric hospice and palliative care populations and the common challenges they face when coping with serious or terminal illnesses. Before we begin, a quick note. Hospice News is able to produce these podcasts thanks to those in the field lending their voice. Let us know if you or others are interested in sharing your thoughts on an episode. If you'd like to sponsor our podcast, send us a note at editor@hospicenews.com. And with that, we'll begin our journey into today's topic. All right, so here with me today, we have Susan Dulcich. She is a director and pediatric nurse practitioner of the Valerie Center in Pediatric Medical Day Stay. Susan is also director of the Pediatric Palliative Care Program at the Utenberg Children's Hospital at Monmouth Medical Center, which is part of the New Jersey-based RWJ Barnabas Health System. So hello, Susan. A really warm thanks to you for joining us today.
And I thank you for inviting me. I'll give you a little bit of background of myself. So I've been a nurse for a really long time. My career was mostly in pediatric hematology oncology. It was in Philadelphia at St. Christopher's, and then the Children's Hospital at Philadelphia, and then Texas Children's Cancer Center. And then I had the privilege of coming to Monmouth Medical Center to develop our pediatric hematology oncology program. And that has, I have a real passion for children that are seriously ill. I want to make a difference, and everybody that I've ever had the privilege to work with has felt the same way. And then about, I guess, maybe 4 years ago, we decided to embark on pediatric palliative care. It started with LNEC, the LNEC curriculum, and then it started with me in my office thinking, I got to do more. And what does that more mean? And what that more meant was that I have a really good friend and colleague, Dr. Debbie LaFond, and she did a Sojourn Scholar on primary palliative care because every hospital can't have a specialty program. So we embarked on primary palliative care for all 5 of our children's hospitals. And I'm happy to report we're going into cohort 4, and we've graduated over 100 participants, doctors, nurses, child life specialists, social workers, nutritionists, therapists, and it has been the highlight of my life to have the privilege to teach what I love, to have the privilege to role play with all of these wonderful people, and then to get to talk about it with you today. So thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, and thank you for that introduction. I'm glad that you kind of walked us through that experience and how you've seen that sort of pediatric space evolve. And that was really the heart of the first question that I had for you is really how has that landscape of pediatric palliative and hospice care providers evolved in more recent years through your lens?
So it's been my opportunity to see pediatric palliative care really grow and to see the real value of pediatric palliative care, even in our system. While every one of our children's hospitals may not have a specialty program, they have embraced this opportunity to train bedside clinicians to empower them. But palliative care has taken on and grown substantially over the past 20 years. It's a medical specialty, and it was really developed from the hospice programs. But the goals are the same. The goals were to improve quality of life. The goals were to affirm life through aligning with patients and families' goals, not our goals. And I think that's pretty exciting. What hasn't evolved is looking at outpatient palliative care. It's underdeveloped and it's in really high demand. And why do I say that? I say that because there's gaps. When you have a patient in the hospital, they want to go home and you want to send them home. The resources are lacking, or the insurance isn't in place, or there's just issues with resources all the way around. You know, everybody wants to be home. It's where they're safe. It's where the family unit is together. And that's what we talk about because it's about them. So I think that this work is really important to continue to optimize for the future of children with serious illness, not just in the hospital, but in the home and in the community.
Yeah, and that community-based palliative care potential is part of the second question that I have for you is what you think as far as just compared to what you've seen so far and how that maybe might inform the future outlook of pediatric end-of-life and serious illness care. You know, where do you see that heading?
So certainly the number of children with serious illness is increasing, and that's a good thing because medical treatment has provided children to live longer. But that doesn't exclude palliative care and that umbrella to give them that safe environment and that opportunity to have a quality of life wherever they are. You know, children aren't small adults, and a lot of attention has always been placed on the adults. You know, the disease trajectories for children are different than adults, as are the goals of care. So we have to, you know, work that through as we not fight, but, you know, interject ourselves for some of that pie. We expect children to live. We don't expect them to die. You know, children get hit with illnesses and they're trying to develop and grow. And it's hard to navigate their world with a serious illness. And I think palliative care provides an opportunity to improve their quality of life every day. It may not give them years, but it'll give them better days. And I think the American Academy of Pediatrics stated it quite well. They stated that you want to have an integrative model so that palliative care is started at diagnosis. We don't know how the child's going to progress. So if the child lives, that's a beautiful thing. But if the child dies, there's a relationship that's established. And there's a situation where you can help them every day, regardless of how they, you know, it's an extra layer of support for the patient and the family. And it's not, we don't want it to be perceived as giving up. We want it to be perceived as enhancing how they live every day. So I guess what I like to believe is that this great medical specialty will continue to gain momentum, get stronger, have some clarity, and then we can develop strong infrastructures within our healthcare system and our insurance systems to better handle the needs of these children and families. So our future, we need to get this information out into the community. We need to educate people about what palliative care is so they're not so frightened. And I could see why they're frightened because many times consults come in late. And what do you think happens? Children die. And what do you think the next person that knows that? They think, well, I don't want that consult. That person died. But we need to get the message out that it's enhancing the quality of life. Early referrals. And I think that we also need to message clinical compassionate care for our patients, our families, and actually each other as we work in interdisciplinary teams. I'm a big proponent of education because the more we educate, the more we empower people to know more and do better. And I told you, we talked about a little bit before with access for all children. So how do we do that? We find out our payer mix, we look at reimbursement, and we do more research.
And I think part of that access challenges are what I wanted to unfold a little bit more as we talk about this. Can you elaborate on some of the financial and family caregiving pieces that go into pediatric palliative care delivery and access?
So here's the thing. Family caregivers play an important role in palliative care. They give all the support. They do the tasks at home. They're the communicators with the healthcare, teams to improve the quality of life for the people that they care about. But the barriers are overwhelming. The barriers that prevent families from getting access to palliative care. And, you know, much of it is dependent on the insurance and going home or being in their own community. Others is access to care. You know, when people are poor, they don't even know about this stuff. Lack of access to health insurance, language barriers, discrimination. You know, what's their culture? And these barriers are further perpetuated by underfunded clinical initiatives, a limited workforce, and not enough research. And I think the only way around this is that we get out there and become advocates. And I can't decide if we should be advocates at a national level, a state level, both levels. But we need to spread this word because it's really, really important. And we should be controlling this, not insurance companies.
And that's part of it. I think that access challenge, and you've mentioned some of the gaps too, among the serious and terminally ill pediatric populations. What have you seen as some of maybe their largest unmet needs?
I think being able to go home. I just, you know, where does everybody want to be? Not in the hospital. And if they go home and they have that ability to be in their home, if they want to go to school, if they want to have their friends over, they can live a normal life as they define as they're going through this horrible experience.
That childhood journey alongside the illness journey, right?
Yes. And then if you're an adolescent, it's even harder because, you know, you're struggling with who you are and what's your identity. Their identity is not their illness. So then they're fighting that illness. But they really, if they're where they're comfortable in their own environment, in their own community, and in their own where it feels safe, makes much more sense.
And I think just as we're talking about some of the common challenges, it's equally important to go on to the other side of that coin and discuss some of the ways to address those challenges. So what are some of the strategic plans that, you know, pediatric hospice and palliative care providers are putting in place that can help address some of these challenges among their patient populations?
So I think what I'm doing here, and I think a lot of people are doing it, is education. Education of the bedside clinicians, empowering them to interact with patients that are seriously ill. And that's can be very challenging and actually a little frightening because everybody's in a rush and you can't rush. Well, I don't think you can rush with patients anyway, but we always have a lot that's going on. So education, early exposure to palliative care in medical schools, nursing schools, ongoing workforce training of hospital staff. And I think that the community providers, we need to work a little more closely with them, especially the pediatricians. They are the focus of these patients and families for all these years. So we need to bring them in and communicate with them as well as home care agencies. I also think that funding's a problem. And what are we doing? I think we need to continue to get institutional support. And I'm not so far removed from looking for philanthropy. I think that there's people out there that want to help and want to support children with serious illness. And I think we just need to figure out ways to go after those dollars. And that's very important. And then we have to look at the gaps to reduce the inequities of care of patients and families. And I think that's part of, like, I guess, advocating for legislation to change. And I think that on state levels, it is changing and people are looking at it. It's not my forte, but I am involved. And I you know, somebody asked me, I always have an opinion, but whether it's right or wrong, it's that, you know, that's not. But I think that legislation and letting people hear what it is we do, because sometimes people may think, oh, that's what you do? You just talk to people? But, you know, those compassionate conversations and that compassionate listening is really important as you go through a really serious illness. At least I think so.
Go concordant care. Like you said, the pediatric populations have much different needs or much different goals and wishes in their illness trajectories. So then an adult might, who's, you know, closer to the end of their life or have lived so much life. These are children or adolescents or young adults who are still developing their life while they're navigating a serious illness.
Absolutely. And I think that when we talk about some unmet needs with children with serious illness or terminally ill patients, one of the things that jumps out to me is, you know, we may be the medical people, but we don't ask our patients enough and our families what they need. What do they hope for? What are their goals? We seem to have, you know, we have protocols, we have roadmaps, we have ways that we think they need to be treated, but everything's not a cookbook. There's human beings at the other side of that. And if we don't engage and find out what's important to them, I think we miss the compassion and the care that palliative care is all about.
I think some of the issue that as you've kind of alluded to here in today's conversation is just having that family support for the parent, the guardian of, or whoever that caregiver is in playing a role in that pediatric patient's life. At the other end of that, you have someone that needs to take to them to sometimes travel very far distances. Like you said, that lack of resources of providers is an issue for access as well. So given all these challenges that we're discussing today, our really take-home question here is what we see is some of the maybe systematic changes that might be needed to improve the support for seriously ill and terminally ill pediatric patients and their families. What do you see as some of those systematic changes?
Well, first, I think that each of us needs to be aware of our attitudes and our biases regarding misconceptions of palliative care, because that gets in the way of children getting early referrals. It gets in the way of prolonging. Perhaps if, you know, somebody's, not that we want to shorten somebody's life, but do we really want to, we don't want to cause harm. So we need to be aware of who we are and who are we doing what we do for. So that's why I talked about you need to talk to your patients. What matters to them? What are their goals? What do they hope for? And I think that the other thing is being compassionate and caring for people doesn't take a lot of time. It takes more time worrying that you don't have the time. Just go in and do it. Don't stand at the door and say, hi, how you doing today? Go into the patient's room. Sit with them. Face them, like eye-to-eye contact. Ask them if it's a good time. We think respectfully we have to be, you know, the tables are turned. It's about the patient and what they need, not us. I'm a big, as I said before, I think we need to continue interdisciplinary education, multidisciplinary teams, because you can't do this work alone. This is, it's hard, it's stressful, but it's really nicely done when you do it together. And if you're together, you are getting the same messaging so that when you talk to the patient, we're all giving a consistent message. One of the things that we did here that I think is beginning to make a difference is that we developed a primary palliative care champion program. So what that means is people have gone through our program, have come forward to say that they would like to champion on their respective units so that they could support the staff and the patients to improve the quality of care. And we just started that. So while we're in cohort 4, for teaching, we're early in our development of the champions. But I think it's something that will allow and provide sustainability of primary palliative care. And then, of course, you know, what is our commitment to our patients? How do we improve communication with our community partners? We need to pull them in. And before I give my last thing, I want to say that something that's really missing, you know, there's over 17 million adults that serve as caregivers for their children. What are we doing about that with regard to respite care? How are we helping them? Like, I get to go home at the end of the day. That's a good thing. But moms and dads and caregivers, they're there. And how do we support them? Because that's really hard and it's exhausting. And lastly, I think we have to continue to get recognition from the very top of our hospital organizations. Like, we're endorsed by the World Health Organization, the American Academy of Pediatrics. They recognize this as important work, but it's the infrastructure that we need to continue to work on to support and sustain pediatric palliative care.
I think that's just the multitude of factors that go into it is precisely why we worded that as systematic, that there's a lot that goes into the care delivery. And I appreciate you bringing awareness and a light to that and lending your voice today to just kind of talk through some of the challenges and opportunities in this space.
And I want to thank you for this opportunity. I really am very appreciative.
Thank you, Susan. We appreciate your time, your candor today, and we hope that this conversation brings to light many more in the pediatric hospice and palliative care space. So thanks again, Susan, for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up this Elevate podcast. This is Holly Vossel, Senior Reporter for Hospice News, an Aging Media Network news vertical, and WTWH Media Company. Thanks for listening and staying tuned for more episodes. Take care for now.